It is 26 minutes after the hour. It's a therapeutic Thursday. We're joined by Pastor Robbie Pruitt. Robbie lives in Alexandria, Virginia, has his church in Fairfax, and he is the executive director of Preserving Bible Times. And not in order of priority necessarily, but he's also an Anglican pastor. You need to know that, because we're involved in liturgy frequently here when Robbie joins us, and we learn stuff, particularly about how Anglican congregations are kept focused on God's Word through the year, through liturgy. So, Robbie, I've got to ask you, this weekend is identified as ...
The third Sunday in Advent.
Okay.
Thanks so much for having me on, Jim and David. Yeah, good morning. To be with you all on the Broken Road.
Robbie, we're glad to have you along, and we're focused on an Advent story, and this wouldn't have popped into my mind as an Advent story, but it really, truly is. And if folks want to open their Bibles to Matthew 11, verses 1 through 10, and you might also take a look at Isaiah 35, because these two are intimately related, aren't they?
Indeed, yeah. They're very much connected. And concerning John the Baptist, the forerunner of Jesus, his cousin, a little bit older than Jesus, John the Baptist, but he came before Jesus in the spirit of not only Isaiah, a voice crying in the wilderness, but also Elijah, because he invokes Elijah wearing the camel's hair and eating locust, according to Kings. So John the Baptist is coming as the forerunner of the Messiah who is to come. He's the long-awaited and last of the Old Testament prophets, and the first of the New Testament prophets we see right out the gate.
We think he was just weird, wearing camel, but had roots in history in the Old Testament. I mean, this was a part of his message.
Yeah, he was a little weird.
but different.
Yeah, expected
for his time.
On, apparently,
he was a throwback, is what he was.
Yeah, exactly. All the way back to Elijah. So there's two garments you can wear in the priestly line, according to Leviticus, that are legitimate. There's the linen garments, which all the priests were wearing, and then there's the garments of camel hair, which only John the Baptist is wearing that we know of, or at least that's mentioned. And John the Baptist is most likely connected with the Essenes in the north and western shoreline of the sea, the Dead Sea, the Great Salt Sea. Mm-hmm. And that's at the Jordan Rift Valley, down by Jericho. And so he's there, he's baptizing, and he's the baptizer of Jesus, too. He baptizes Jesus. And Matthew wants you to know that John the Baptist is at the Jordan River, because it's a pointing out of the passing through the waters, because Matthew is showing you that Jesus is the greater Moses that's entering us into the promised land of the kingdom of God. Remember, the Israelites came through from the desert, from the east to the west, into this, quote, promised land. They came through the Jordan River.
We think of the Red Sea parting, but there was a subsequent event, which was a remez, because remember, this was like years and year, 40 years later. So it was a powerful reminder to the Israelites.
Yeah, and that's a trick question, isn't it? How many times in the Bible were the waters parted?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is twice.
Am I wrong?
No.
Oh, okay.
the waters were actually parted four times.
Four times.
And four times. You have the Red Sea, mm-hmm, parting the Red Sea. You have the parting of the Jordan, not once.
Those are my two.
But three times.
Oh, ho.
Because Elijah and Elisha part the Jordan River.
That's
Remember,
right.
At Elisha's call, Elijah parts the Jordan River with his cloak, and he's taken up in a chariot of fire as they cross from the west to the east. And then Elisha is left with Elijah's cloak and parts the Jordan River going back into the promised land. And again, all of this is happening down at the Jordan Rift Valley.
Is that why John the Immerser, John the Baptizer, John the Baptist picked this location? Because it had so much, carried so much weight with Israel?
Well, that, and there's plenty of water there.
Well,
it's fresh water, the Jordan River. But yes, I would say, and yes, you've got the initial entry into the Promised Land in the days of Joshua when the priests set their feet first. And this is God parting the Jordan River at flood stage. And we know it's the flood stage because it says, the text says, that the Jordan River was overflowing its banks. And what that means is it's springtime because the snow melts from Mount Hermon are flooding into the headwaters of the Jordan River, into the Sea of Galilee, and then down the descent of the Jordan River.
The so-called Jordan Rift, I think it's referred to. Yeah.
Yeah, the Jordan Rift Valley and the Jordan Rift. So it's from 500 feet below sea level at the Sea of Galilee down to 1,400 feet below sea level at the Dead Sea. And so it's springtime and the river's flooded and the Israelites, God parts the Jordan River to show the Israelite people that as God was with Moses, God is now with Joshua and with them as he enters into helps them to enter into the Promised Land. So the parting through the waters, we've got salvation through the waters in the days of Noah. You've got salvation through the waters, deliverance through the waters and the Red Sea, the parting of from the delivery of slavery in Egypt into the wilderness wanderings when God is with Moses. And now you've got the Israelites entering into the Promised Land with Joshua. And then you've got the exchanging of the guards with the prophet Elijah and Elisha as they go east. Elijah parts the Jordan River. He's taken up in a chariot of fire. Elisha goes back across on dry land, parting, striking the Jordan River with Elijah's cloak. So four times the waters are parted. And yes, John is baptizing in these same waters of the Jordan River that have been parted three times. And he is the prophet in the line of Elijah. And it's Elijah's cloak that parts the water. Salvation is always coming through the waters, through the waters.
You know, I always pictured that with him baptizing a gentle flowing river. But if it was at flood stage, spring, snow melt from Hermon, that could kill you. I mean, we've seen pictures of Texas floods in recent months here.
Yeah.
Where it was just an awesome display. It was scary. It would do you in. That must have been the picture on that time. On that time when they crossed the river into the area of Jericho, that changes my whole picture.
Absolutely. So when John the Immerser is coming, there are many times that people come for mikvah or immersion. It's conversion. It's purification. And in Christianity, we know it as baptism. And that's where we get baptism from. John the Baptizer or the Immerser is what he's called. But he's coming in the line of a different kind of prophet. He's coming in the line of Elijah. He's coming in fulfillment of Malachi. And he's coming in fulfillment of Isaiah. Remember, he quotes Isaiah. I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness, make straight the pathway of the Lord. This is Isaiah 40. And so John is coming as this voice crying in the wilderness. And again, you see this in Isaiah 35, in the wilderness and the dry land shall be glad. The desert shall rejoice and blossom like the crocus. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given it, and the majesty of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord and the majesty of our God. Strengthen the weak hands, make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who have an anxious heart, be strong, fear not, Behold, your God will come with vengeance, with recompense of God. He will come to save you. Remember, we were talking about Advent being an observance of not one, but two Advents. You have the first Advent of the coming of Jesus, and you have the second coming of Jesus being the second Advent. So Isaiah 35 is prophesying of streams in the desert, speaking of water, a promised land that flows east, even causing the desert and the wilderness to flourish. Remember what it says in Isaiah 40, every valley shall be raised up, every high place brought low, every crooked place straight. Make straight the pathway of the Lord. I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness, make straight. So this is the image that John the Baptizer invokes when he prepares the way of Jesus and ushers in his first, in some regards, his first advent at the beginning of his ministry at 30 years old.
Now, at this juncture in Matthew 11, John is in prison on the east side of the Dead Sea in one of Herod's palaces, and he's about to be executed.
So Machaerus, yes.
That's the name of the place. And this is Herod Agrippa, beyond Herod the Great, because this was, 25 years beyond Herod the Great's death.
Antipas, isn't it?
Antipas. Did I say it wrong?
Agrippa.
Not Agrippa. He was a king that came later. That was my mistake. Sorry about that.
No worries.
But John is in high tension here. He's not happy. He'd like to get back to work. And he's wondering if what he has done to this point has been wasted. So he sends his disciples to Jesus, and they apparently interrupt him during he was instructing his 12 disciples in Matthew 11, and then there was a crowd there waiting to hear from him. But John's disciples came and asked if Jesus was the one. And I always thought Jesus should just say yes. But he had a much more complex answer, didn't he?
He did. And he did say yes. But it's not in the way that we would have thought him to have said it. It's fascinating that he actually quotes Isaiah back to him.
Well, this is a little misleading because if you read the New Testament translated from Greek, he said the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have good news preached to them. This sounds like a paraphrase of Isaiah, but if you go into your Old Testament and read Isaiah 35, it reads a little differently because it was translated from Hebrew. And so if you don't know that, you don't understand that he's quoting Isaiah for John's benefit here, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. So John's quoting 40 when he comes onto the scene. He's quoting Isaiah 40. So now he is imprisoned. And remember, he spoke out against Herod marrying his brother's wife. And the daughter dances before Herod. And he says, I'll give you up to half of my kingdom, whatever you want. And she says, give me the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And so when John is imprisoned, he's imprisoned in Machaerus, which was one of Herod the Great's mountain fortresses. It's actually on the east side of the Jordan. So if you think about John being one of the Essenes on the western shore of the Jordan River, at the northwest of the Dead Sea, now in the shadow of death, John the Baptist is sitting in a prison on the east, the southeast from where he was baptizing. He's southeast on this eastern coast of the Dead Sea, up on a mountain fortress called Machaerus. See, and
this is why they put maps in the back of your Bible.
Absolutely.
You need to know the geography. Wonderful. Yeah.
So if you think about Isaiah 35 as like a prophecy of when the Messiah returns, he's going to make paradise out of the wilderness, right? He's going to make paradise out of the desert. And so John, gosh, John the Baptist, just picture this image. He's gone from the west of the Jordan back to the east of the Jordan. So he's gone from promised land back to wilderness.
I never thought of it that way.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, if you just think about where he is geographically and what's transpired around this river, Jordan, you know, at the beginning of his ministry, he's baptizing. He's the voice of one crying in the wilderness. Everybody's going to him to be baptized. Even Jesus's disciples saying, you know, this, you know, he's baptizing more people. He's baptizing all these people at the Jordan. And Jesus says, don't worry about how many people are baptizing. I mean, we're all together here, but he's a popular prophet. And now he's in prison, and he's not just in prison anywhere. He's imprisoned in a wilderness prison back into the desert.
Psychologically, this must have been a terrific blow to him personally, being that close to the history of the river and the water.
Absolutely. A significant demotion at a geographical location. He's literally, I mean, his life is the pits. He's in the pit. He's in the prison.
I think the word is humiliation of John the Baptist.
Say it again.
Humiliation.
Humiliation. Yeah. He's humbled by this for sure. And and because of this, he's almost despairing. And so he sends his disciples to Jesus saying, are you the one we should be looking for? Or should we look for somebody else? Like, are you the Messiah? And why does he say it? Because in the scriptures, in Isaiah, and you can find this later on in the chapter. So let's just look at Isaiah 42. God says, I am the Lord. I have called you in righteousness. This is Isaiah 42, verses 6 through 9. I will take you by the hand and keep you. I will give you as a covenant for the people, a light for the nation, to open up the eyes of the blind, to bring out the prisoners from the dungeon, and from the prison those who sit in darkness. I am the Lord. That is my name. My glory I give to no other. My praise to carved idols, nor my praise to carved idols. Behold, the former things have come to pass, and the new things I now declare. Before they spring forth, I tell you of them. Now, that's the fulfillment of Isaiah, that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed. This is Isaiah 42. Now, if you look at Jesus's quote, when John sends these messengers, Jesus says, when he hears about John being in prison, he sent word by his disciples and said to them, are you the one who is to come? This is John the Baptist to Jesus, or should we seek another? Jesus answered, go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up, and the poor have good news preached to them. And blessed are the ones who are not offended by me. Notice what's left out? The delivery of the prisoners.
That's twice. Because he did that in Nazareth at the same... Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, he's editing the passage to give John a message. And it's, yes, I'm the one you're looking for, but you're not getting out of prison. This is the end for you.
Good news, bad news.
It's good news, bad news. Exactly, oh. Dave.
Well, they were cousins. They must have been very close. Yes. That isn't talked a lot about. That's kind of assumed once we hear about Elizabeth and Mary and their encounter and how John is 3 months older. But I imagine they knew each other most of their lives.
Absolutely. And you get this in the text. It's in the text when Jesus comes to be baptized by John, he recognizes him. He says, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. This is who I was telling you about." So John knows who he is. He recognizes him. He introduces him to everyone there. So you can get this in the second Sunday of Advent readings in Matthew chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. And again, Matthew is writing with a purpose. Matthew's showing you that Jesus is the greater Moses. He's also rooting you in the land, the geography, the topography, and even these rivers and the river crossings. If it's true that God parted the Red Sea with Moses, God parted the Jordan River with Joshua, and that there's this promised land, and then there's the wilderness wanderings and the coming out of slavery, you see John the Baptist is now back east in the wilderness, and he's enslaved by Herod and Machaerus. He's imprisoned by him, not enslaved, but imprisoned. And he's a captive, just like the slaves in Egypt. Now, John is about to experience the true Exodus. He's about to experience the true promised land. And he's martyred for his faith. I believe, if I've got this right, I think he's the first person that we know of who dies for his faith in Jesus.
I can't contradict that. No.
I can. I'll contradict myself. The slaughtering of the innocents.
Herod, yeah.
That
wasn't for their faith, though. That was because of their age. Herod was protecting his territory. So I still go with John the Baptist.
Yeah. So is it that fascinating that this martyrdom of his for living out his faith, for speaking out against Herod, that he's beheaded in Machaerus, and in the Biblical Archaeology, the magazine for Biblical Archaeology, and I highly recommend biblicalarchaeology.org.
Great website.
There is a wonderful article about Herod's throne niche and the dancing floor, which Salome danced before Herod, that's been uncovered in the archaeological record, and it's opposite of Masada. Masada's on the western shore, about midway, the midpoint of the Dead Sea, and then Machaerus is north of the Dead Sea on the eastern shore. So the archaeology, this scene of the dance before Herod, I mean, they found the throne niche, they've found the dance floor. So biblicalarchaeology.org, if you just search Machaerus, you will find that, or John the Baptist's beheading, you'll find that. But John is fulfilling Isaiah, and when he questions Jesus, Jesus quotes Isaiah 42. So John the Baptist is in Isaiah 40, and then Jesus quotes Isaiah 42. So John is in Isaiah 40, but he hasn't made the transition from 40 to 42, that he's ultimately going to be delivered from his imprisonment, but not in this world. It's going to be in the life everlasting. So it'll be the next life. Mm-hmm. And why does John have to prepare the way is another thing. If everyone's expecting Elijah to come, why doesn't Elijah come? Jesus said, if you're willing to accept it, it's John the Baptist, is Elijah. But remember, there are two people who walk with God and do not die. There's Enoch, he walked with God and was not. And then we alluded to Elijah, who was taken up in a chariot of fire. He doesn't die. He's taken to heaven in a chariot. And we also know that there was a wrestling match over Moses' body with the prophet, with the angel Michael. We find this in the book of Jude. that there's God is wrestling through the angel Michael, and Satan are fighting or disputing over Moses' body. Most scholars believe that Moses is, you know, Michael wins the battle and takes Moses' body. Who appears to Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration except for Elijah?
Moses.
And Moses.
Moses and Elijah.
Yeah. Because their bodies are resurrected. I have a friend of mine that believes that they actually appeared with Jesus physically because their bodies are heavenward. And so when John the Baptist comes in the spirit of Elijah, he's fulfilling the anticipation of this messenger in Malachi. Remember, the Bible ends with Malachi prophesying that there will be a voice crying in the wilderness, that there will be this messenger that will come before the Messiah. And that's how they will ultimately know that he is who he says he is. So you find this in Malachi 3. That we find the John the Baptist passage. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way for me. He will prepare the way for the Lord whom you seek. And so that's Malachi 3:1. So John the Baptist is fulfilling Isaiah. He's fulfilling Malachi, and he is fulfilling the prophet Elijah, and he's doing this by wearing Elijah's clothes.
It strikes me then that John's execution marks a real turning point. And there's a song we played just a short while ago by Andrew Peterson, wonderful song, Christmas song. It's called So Long, Moses. The old is gone, the new has come. And John was instrumental. And this whole thing kind of, it's like turning the page in a book. And we're grateful for this. This has been a super session with you, Robbie. Thank you, Robbie. Also, I mentioned he's the executive director of Preserving Bible Times. He's done a couple of newsletters already this month, but you can sign up for the Preserving Bible Times newsletter. It's called Between the Lines. Their website is preservingbibletimes.org. You'll find that's an intriguing thing to receive every month in your emails. Free. You just got to sign up for it and get your name on the list. It'll come to you. And again, preservingbibletimes.org, filled with streaming video and ebooks and things you can buy, and a lot of free things too, all centered on biblical context, helping you to read between the lines. There's nothing there that isn't in the Bible, just that we're not culturally equipped to see it. But they can help you do that at Preserving Bible Times. Robbie, thanks so much. We'll look forward to it. Well, next week we're getting close to the Christmas Day, but I think we can do it next week, can't we?
I think so. Hey, squeeze another one in for sure.
Let's
good
do
to be
that.
With you, Jim
let's
and David, on the broken road.
Robbie, thank you. Bye-bye.